Welcome to the sixth episode of Demol Velkia Season 12 Recaps and Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and joining me as always is the Canadian who hopes to outlive us all, but that's unlikely given his proclivities, Logan Saunders.
Good morning.
And the guy whose voice we're always disappointed to hear without any filters, David Vindley.
Good night.
Yeah, all right, legend. It's weird, isn't it? I mean, this is going to lead into the question that I've not been able to ask for 21 episodes at this point, but where in the world is Logan Saunders?
I don't think anyone's going to get this one, but I'm in Newfoundland, but not Labrador.
He is. Have you seen any good dogs yet?
Have I seen any dogs? No, because I landed at the air. I did in the Calgary airport, but I did not when I landed in Newfoundland. And apparently, what was the weird thing? Oh yeah, right when I landed, they had a bunch of British pastries set up because it's only been in the past month that they opened up the St. John's to London Gatwick flight route.
Hmm.
And then Uber's only been here for 1 week. And oh, wow. I took an Uber, and they already have all of the signs painted on the floor and all the signs guiding to where the rideshare app pickup zone is. So yeah, the very first day that Uber started up last week, they were all ready for it. And the taxis knew exactly which zone to bring out their clubs and machetes to.
Oh. I suppose it's good you're in Newfoundland, but not Labrador, because the horses might get jealous.
Yeah. And the dogs are so big in Labrador, they may as well be classified as horses.
So yeah, you might be able to hear a little bit of tiredness in both mine and Logan's voices, mainly because it's like, well, Newfoundland time, it's 5 a.m. for him at the moment, and it's like 8:30 for me.
And it was a long time to get out here from BC. The flight is shorter between Calgary and St. John's than it is from St. John's to London.
Mm. And you had to flap the wings yourself.
Yeah, just...
And boy, are your arms tired, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Not for the first time on this podcast. The good news is, of course, that next week the time zone should be a little more convenient for you.
Considering we'll be in the same, or close to the same one, we'll be 1 hour apart.
Yeah, I think this is the only one this season where the time zones are an absolute pain in the ass. Before I forget as well, happy Groundhog Day to Daniel Peak. We mustn't forget that.
Oh yeah, happy Groundhog Day, Dan.
He hates it when we forget it, so I just needed to wish him a happy Groundhog Day before I forget, because it is going to be May now as well.
Yeah, it's going to be May. I can't believe it's a Swedish vocalist that is responsible for that.
What, Max Martin?
No, for It's Gonna Be May.
Is it? Never do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just heard the story, because NSYNC did the Hot Ones podcast, you know, where they make celebrities eat wings. So, yeah, apparently that was the story there, that it was a Swedish vocalist where he's like, no, don't say me, say May.
Hmm.
So that's why it happened.
It's always Sweden's fault.
Yeah. Blame Sweden.
How do you think you would do with Hot Ones out of interest?
I think I would do really well.
Yeah, I'd be good at it.
I would not.
Shocker.
I would be very much on the Conan end of the scale. I was watching Conan's Hot Ones last week, and yeah, I felt a kindred spirit there, really.
Well, the Isles aren't known for spicy food.
That they spent half the world, you know, invading the world for spices, and all they got was tea.
Yeah. On a podcast admin point of view as well, Bingo wasn't Fuzzy's finest hour last week. I think it was her lowest score in about a year.
Oh, really?
It was, yeah. Was it 7 or 9 squares she got? It was certainly not brilliant.
No. There were a lot of misses.
There were indeed a lot of misses. And I make the running score, ignoring the Vidim finale shenanigans, 6 to Fuzzy and 8 to us.
I think I'm on a watch list now for how many times I had to look for a photo of Kevin Sorbo for all the wrong answers.
It does also mean that we only need to win 2 of the next 4 boards, I think it is, to win the year.
Go us.
Yep, go us, go team.
Although I've already got this week's symbols picked out, and they're much better.
Yes, they are. Although I don't think you're going to top the making a Fuzzy the correct symbol.
No.
For the Mario Kart Challenge. Also, on the note of the Mario Kart Challenge, I was thinking about this earlier in the week. Do you think that they had that one in reserve for a potential Japan season?
I don't know. I think it would have been harder to justify in Japan, because I think there's more like video game options there.
Yeah, but I think the problem of doing it in Italy is the fact that Mario famously is not Italian. He's from Brooklyn.
Mm.
It would have saved a lot of arguing
yeah.
if they'd just done it in Japan.
Well, that's because you're a pedant.
Well, I am a pedant, but I mean, that's why you guys love me. Well, tolerate me.
Well.
Shut up, Saunders. Your bullying is coming this episode, and you bloody well know it. Bindles and I were very much discussing this episode when I watched it unsubbed on Sunday, just being like, oh, I can't wait for Saunders to see it. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We were very, very excited recording Historians on Monday, just going, oh my god, he's not seen it yet. He doesn't know what's coming. So, previously, the Final Six had their own Greek tragedy, as despite Herculean efforts, Mikhail and Senna couldn't hold their pillars, and it was all for nothing. A visit by their mothers and sisters saw some comfort be brought from home, but it was the group as a whole who ended up uncomfortable, as Lynn was willed the one remaining doubler and sent home with it as a souvenir.
Womp womp, that's the sound of no doubling.
And we open, because this show is very much pandering to us at this point, with a mole chat half an hour after the execution in Sirigiano. Gilles says, all right, no more doublers.
They are all gone. I'm so happy about that. Four doublers and no doublings. The ideal scenario for me.
Are you ready for tomorrow? Letting them hear your voice? No filter, no distortion?
It's quite exciting, but anything that can cost the group money is worth the risk.
You may have noticed that since these bastards stole our AI joke, we're now going for the real voice of the mole, otherwise known as David Bindley.
Hi. This is because Logan couldn't do it properly.
Well, yeah, we didn't want to gamble on Saunders, A, having everything written down, and B, doing this at 5 o'clock in the morning. And the episode title is, This Will Turn Out Well in the Finale, said by Stephanie. And it is day 13, and everyone's singing on the way to Kakumo, and yet nobody chose Kokomo. It's the obvious joke to do.
Swing and a miss, cast.
Yeah, no respect for the classics.
Nope. And it is a medieval town known for its numerous churches and an impressive castle, where Gilles meets them.
That could apply to almost any southern Italian town.
That was pretty much what I thought. It's like, that's not a landmark thing, just saying, oh, yeah, they have castles and lots of churches. It's Italy. Of course they do.
That's every single town in the whole country.
Gilles meets them at the castle and tells them there will be an intense battle over the next few days, starting right now. He's looking for three candidates who aren't afraid to face death, and two who would rather not face death and have a leisurely trip through Kakumo. Oh, this fucking show. This challenge is a delight.
Just the laugh that came out of my mouth when I, you know, realised they were in coffins.
Yeah.
Just like with the little slats as well, just for them to see out of.
Of course. What else would they do?
Well, you've got to put the mail in the coffin somehow.
Yeah. Where are those unpaid water bills going to go?
Stephanie and Senna are being paraded through Kakumo in coffins. As promised, they can rest in peace. Wonderful voiceover from Gilles. Really made me laugh when I watched the sub version yesterday. Stephanie, however, is not resting in peace because she looks hella uncomfortable.
She has to remind herself of all the amenities of a coffin. I have air. I have light. This is a hammock. I'm super comfortable right now.
I had forgotten how funny the people being dumped into coffins visual was from Mexico, and this very much brought it back.
I like it whenever they get placed down, they have to communicate with the locals. It reminds me of that that British street performer who's always inside of trash cans.
Nothing in this challenge is funnier than Stephanie at the second coffee break point, sticking her hand out and just going, "We are not dead." I think they can tell that, Stephanie, given that, you know, you're living.
Or the locals will say, ah, zombies. Undead Flemish people.
And the other three are receiving an initiation in the arts of Cotello knife fighting, an ancient Sicilian tradition. The two in coffins are being accompanied by a Sicilian funeral band who have prepared some Dutch language classics which will help them in the future of the challenge. And the knife fighters meet up with Gilles in the castle, where he explains the actual challenge to them. In half an hour, the coffins will be taken to a church where a funeral mass will be taking place, and it's up to them to do what you should do and crash the funeral.
Did you recognize any of the Dutch songs?
I did not.
No, neither did I.
There is nothing by Willie Summers, so no.
I mean, the only Dutch song I recognize is that one by Anita Meyer that turned up in Czechia.
Yeah.
And then it's basically just that and Eurovision.
Yeah, there's a Eurovision song in the trailer for next week as well, isn't there?
Yeah. Prepare to see it, prepare to song. There's been a lot of Eurovision this year, actually, because we've had at least two of the ringtone songs were by Eurovision acts. Two of the songs here are by Belgian Eurovision acts. They had Gloria and Umberto Tozzi sang for Italy as well. And then we've got the one next week. I'm starting to wonder whether it's a deliberate choice.
I think it's a deliberate choice for one of two reasons. It's either a clue or they're just lampshading the fact that the finale is taking place on Eurovision weekend this year.
That's a good point.
Which may be a bit of fun for us in a couple of weeks, Saunders. It's the fact that I don't know whether Antwerp really celebrates Eurovision or whether they have watch parties or anything.
No.
I hear Kinniopolis is going to be booked up.
Yeah. I have heard Belgium is one of the favourites this year.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So maybe it will be busy in Antwerp then.
Yeah. Well, although, weirdly, the Dutch song is written or co-written by a former Venom contestant, which is super weird given all of this.
I cannot believe Emanuela Greaves has branched out into songwriting.
I know.
We knew she had some talents, but still.
Yeah.
Oh. Rat-a-tat-tat.
Rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat.
So if the Knife Fighters want to earn money, which would be a welcome change, Sassy's Gilles DaCosta moment.
He was in a really weird mood this week.
He was. He was really, really sarky with them, which is delightful. Mm. We are on record as loving it when hosts get a little bit sarcastic with people on this show.
Mm.
I liked his nickname when the coffins were being dragged through the streets when he was known as Papal Bear Gilles DaCosta.
I think you mean Papal Bearer.
Pardon me. It's a bit of a tongue twister. Papal Bear Gilles DaCosta.
It's a bit of a tongue twister. Wait till later in the episode. I've got 20 of the fuckers to say. That's not an exaggeration, by the way. It is literally 20.
No, because Rachel Rowell has been busy this week.
Was it just me, or was Grandmaster Raphael Ermino looking a lot like Mario?
Yeah, he really
was. He even
was
the right height and had the right mustache.
He looked like Mario played by Charles Martinet in the Mario film. You know, old Mario. Mario's dad, who was voiced by Charles Martinet. He looked a lot like him.
Yeah, it's like I missed out on that ROM hack of Super Mario World where Mario wields a knife.
But also, that dude did not look 81.
I guess self-defense just it's a great way to keep fit and have fun and keep looking young.
Yeah. To remove incorrect churches, they must beat Grandmaster Raphael's apprentice in a knife fight. Each of them gets to pick a type of knife, either a kitchen knife, a pocket knife, or an oyster knife. While one person is fighting the apprentice, the other must use the knife they chose to discover the correct move to parry with. And if they parry all three moves in a round, then Grandmaster Raphael will remove a wrong church from the map.
He was not one of the Ninja Turtles.
No.
Is it really a good idea to give these people knives?
As long as they're not near each other.
There would have been some damage if Bart was involved.
Yeah, Bart would not have parried the moves. He would have just stabbed.
Yeah. Luckily, this isn't Canary Islands.
So Mikael starts in the knife fight while Charlotte has to cut the moves from pumpkins using her kitchen knife, and her carving time reduces with each round, first 20 seconds, then 15, and then 10.
I like how first she says, yeah, we just have to move like Michael Jackson. I don't remember Michael Jackson dancing to knives.
I think it's also a good idea that they gave Charlotte the kitchen knife now rather than after the next challenge, where she probably wouldn't have used it on pumpkins.
Ew.
The coffins reach their first coffee break. There are five famous murder victims, which Stephanie can see through the window in her coffin. On the center side are 12 names of their murderers, and each correct match is worth €600. Oh my god.
This whole fucking show.
I mean, some of these were way easier than others. The Julius Caesar one, obviously, fairly obvious. The JFK one, fairly obvious when you realize his teeth are his.
Who did she think it was supposed to be? Who, or rather, my question was, what does she think JFK looks like, if not that?
Yeah.
A local even comes by and says, oh, that's Kennedy. She's like, oh, no, that's not Kennedy. Okay, then what does Kennedy look like?
I was more confused by how she thought John Lennon looked like Harry Potter, but not.
I mean, none of these guesses are going to top the already infamous Marvin Gaye is Lenny Kravitz. Famously, not dead.
Yeah, he doesn't even get killed off in Hunger Games, as far as I remember.
He is more famous for splitting his leather trousers on stage than anything else.
Just like Matt Barr.
Did Reva Steenkamp win that show she was on?
Which one? Who Wants to Be Murdered by a Millionaire?
No, there was like that Survivor knockoff that she was on when she was murdered. And I think they just kept the season going. Like, they kept airing it.
I don't know. I never knew that she did that.
Hmm.
Tropica Island of Treasure was the show you were thinking of. Because yeah. We've all heard of that.
I really hope nobody in South Africa was watching Belgian Mole. But yeah, the man who looks a bit like Bob Marley, I'm thinking swing and a miss. But the John Lennon who looks like Harry Potter but isn't, I think that's destroyed me for the past 24 hours. I'm just imagining like Hagrid and a young Ringo meeting up, and Hagrid's like, Ringo, have you ever had anything happen to you that you couldn't explain? You're a wizard, Ringo.
Here's the thing. The tactic on this challenge, or this mini challenge, is get someone to read the names out. Ignore the pictures for now. You don't look at the pictures until you find the names, because most of these murderers are fairly famous.
Mm.
You can probably reverse engineer all five of these. Maybe not the Reva Steenkamp one, because it's harder than the rest of them. But if you see Marvin Gaye on that board, you go, well, quite famously, Marvin Gaye was killed by his own father, so that might be Marvin Gaye.
Mm.
Or Brutus on there, you go, I wonder if it's going to be Julius Caesar.
And then Lord Voldemort, well, I guess that's going to be Harry Potter.
Mm.
They way overcomplicate this mini-challenge.
At least we now know why Gilles de Costa was in jail, though.
My other favourite bit of this mini-challenge is, of course, Senna's rampant disapproval for Stephanie's descriptions. Because he has got to the point where he does not give a shit about being polite anymore.
I think as soon as Stephanie uttered the words, a man who looks like Harry Potter but isn't, I think that was the end of it.
Yeah. Senna very much eye-rolled at her, and it was delightful.
And a woman who is Julia Roberts, but not.
If Senna's eyes rolled any further back in his head, they would have kept him in the coffin.
And then they would have to put Stephanie's name up on the board.
It's a surprise 13th choice. So yeah, they call out to locals to help them. Some kids help them with Brutus, and one hangs the first sign up correctly. They get John Lennon too, but the local who says JFK is JFK thinks Marvin Gaye is Lenny Kravitz. The other three are JFK, Marvin Gaye, and the frankly ballsy choice of Reva Steenkamp. I can't see that she won her show, by the way.
Yeah.
The murder happened the week before the premiere, apparently. Mikhail is next to free the moves while Bernard performs them, and he must shuck oysters. And he also succeeds in his three, removing a second church. The second coffee break happens, and this time they must identify the five songs that the brass band played, each worth €600. And as I said, Stephanie has to assure the locals that they're not dead, and with their help, they can hear the lyrics of the songs that were played as they are written on floral tributes on the coffins. Let me be clear, making Italians read Dutch lyrics in English is perfection.
It was like Larry King singing Lady Gaga songs.
We still need to make Logan recite the 20 questions about the identity and actions of the mole thing in Dutch.
We do, actually. I might make him do that maybe next week. We'll let him be less sleep deprived. You're on notice, Saunders. We're going to make you do it next week.
Oh,
okay. Do it at the finale in front of Gilles.
oh no, I have a plan for when we're in front of Gilles. I want to get a list together of all the nicknames we've given him and get his live reaction to them.
I'm so sorry, Gilles.
Especially after this week. And they get another two songs thanks to the locals for a total of 2,400 euros for the stakes. The final round in the castle is Bernard with a Swiss Army knife and Charlotte with the moves. First, he must read one of the moves using a magnifying glass, then he has to saw through a bamboo tube within 20 seconds. And we don't find out what the third one is, because Bernard is shit at sawing through a bamboo tube.
He channeled his inner Jamie Newton.
He probably could have just like snapped it on his leg.
He tried. He tried to do the Chili Davis technique.
I have also never heard of a Swiss Army knife having a saw in it.
Want to play a game?
Thank you. And the coffins reach the church, and the castle team have until the eulogy is finished to reach them. And Gilles gives them an offer. He'll remove the final church from them and they'll go to the right place, but it will cost them half of the stakes. Mikhail goes for the offer, Bernard doesn't, leaving the casting vote with Charlotte. Did you also notice the Wilhelm scream as the doors opened at the church?
No, I was trying to look for the Wilhelm scream this week. I thought of it after I was done the episode. I was thinking, I didn't hear the Wilhelm scream.
I didn't spot it in either of my two watchers of this episode, but it got pointed out on Discord that, yeah, it was as the church doors opened, apparently.
Thank you, Discord.
Thank you, Newfoundland. Wait, no, wrong show.
What would you have done in this situation?
I think you have to go for the safety in this situation.
Yeah, 1,200 is better than nothing. Well, like, you wouldn't know it's 1,200, but I think, you know, when the pot's low, you go for what you're guaranteed to get, pretty much.
So they reach the church mid Our Father and rescue Senna and Stephanie to finally win a challenge. Gilles congratulates them and tells Senna and Stephanie of the dilemma and that Charlotte took it. Meaning 1,200 euros of 6,000 was earned for the challenge. And he also said that he had a table booked for the wake, but he supposes they could use it as a celebration of life instead.
L'chaim.
I don't think Charlotte moved like Michael Jackson during the challenge. I don't think she even moved like Jagger.
A controversial choice for the pictures on the board would have been to put Michael Jackson up there and then put his doctor's name on the board.
Yeah, they should have done that. And then I don't know. I think Stephanie would have said something really offensive though, trying to describe Michael Jackson's picture.
It could have been just like a random dancing couple and then Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
So in the restaurant, they toast to the group pot finally increasing and discuss their funeral songs. And Charlotte says hers is Songbird and she hopes to outlive them all as she's the youngest. And she even calls Gilles out for being old, despite the fact he's 3 years older than Mikhail.
Did you notice when like she was like, oh, I'm the youngest, so good luck being at my funeral. Bernard and Papa Bear trade looks with each other. They're like, how dare she call us old?
That's the thing. Gilles is the oldest one around that table at 44, I think he is now.
That's all he is?
Yeah, him and Mikhail are the only ones above the Arfbrancosius line.
They're not that far up on top of it.
No, that's the thing. It's Papa Bear on 44, Mikhail on 41, and then Stephanie's mid-30s, I think. Bernard was 34, and then Senna's 27, Charlotte's 26, I think.
Hmm.
I can't remember exactly how old Stephanie is, but I think she was mid-30s. I mean, she's irrelevant now. She's gone, but...
She gone?
Spoilers for the episode.
That's okay. Logan doesn't know yet.
Yeah, we've been keeping it secret for a few days. Yeah, nobody around that table is that much older than the Arfbrancosius line.
Yeah.
And I think going back to the premiere and all the controversy about Charlotte's actions of breaking lockdown rules and all that sort of stuff, I think she just doesn't have a filter and she doesn't think.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt now we've seen this scene, because I think that's just her personality of not having any filter.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. I mean, I am slightly doing damage control given that there's a 75% chance we're going to be meeting her in 2 weeks. But still. So Gilles also gives him 3,000 euros for the pots, but he says he doesn't know how much of it will make it in there. The mole's promise is about to be fulfilled, and one of them will be called by the mole to hear their true, unfiltered voice. All they have to do is bid for it. They can bid from 0 to 3,000 euros, and the second highest bid will win. Anything left over from the €3,000 will go to the group pot.
Yeah, out of all the Vidim seasons I've seen, they've never done that twist before.
No, I love the idea of a second highest bid wins.
Yeah. There is one Vidim season that does do it that you haven't seen yet. I can't remember which season it is, but they basically do like a whole auction with different things like jokers and all that sort of stuff, and the second highest bidder wins it. And then Australia 6 copied it, but then I think that bit, because that was one of the few challenges that season they didn't take from one of the subtitled seasons, they didn't realise that bit in translation, so it just became highest bid wins it, and then the pot ended up going from like 130,000, whatever it was, down to about $7,000.
And the infamous preview was, what in the world could be worth $70,000? And the answer was, an exemption to the final four. I do also love the fact that it's a rare auction challenge where actually the pot won't go down as a result of it. It's not bidding money from the pot, it's bidding money that could go into the pot. And that's a wrinkle I like. Because I think we're pretty well known on this podcast for hating any sort of challenge that involves people bidding money out of the pot and burning money and letting them all basically have an easy ride. This one, I like the idea of it. You can get $3,000, but also you can only bid up to that $3,000.
Yeah, burn mole books, not money.
Yeah. Having said that, only two people in this challenge play it correctly, because Charlotte ends up being the lowest bidder with €200. Then it's Senna with 2,500. Bernard and Stephanie both bid 2,800. And Mikhail wins with the second highest bid of 2,600.
If he didn't have tunnel vision before.
Well, even before I watched this challenge, I thought, what is the best tactic for anyone in this challenge? The answer is, you don't bid too high, dummies. 2,800 is a ludicrously high bid when the maximum is 3,000, because it gives you no wiggle room whatsoever.
I wonder if they were expecting somebody, whether it's the mole or just another player, to bid the full 3,000.
Or like 2,900.
I mean, yeah, but also I think Senna pitched it perfectly with 2,500. That probably in pretty much any other situation would have been a winning bid. But then Mikhail gazumps him by going, well, someone's going to bid really high. I'm going to go 2,600, assuming that someone bids 25. Those two are the only two who play this challenge correctly. But yeah, I mean, Charlotte's €200 bid is a terrible tactic, because obviously no one else is going to bid that low.
But they all agreed, Michael.
Oh no, it's almost like she's on a television program where somebody is lying to the group.
And then, you know, where other people are trying to lie to the group, so they think that's the person who's being paid to lie to the group.
Has she seen this show before?
Is she new?
Has she seen this fucking show? It would have been funnier if she quit. And then in the coffin challenge, they put Charlotte's picture up and then just a pile of euros.
Murdered by everyone else's greed. So the mole rings Mikhail in the car.
I figured out what the twist was going to be about half a second before Mikhail started playing the audio.
It's so delightful. Especially knowing what we've done with this shit before.
Before I do the thing, did they wash the BMW before they did this?
No. It was filthy.
Like, I think that was my favourite thing of the whole challenge. Just, they're clearly doing this to plug the car. Like, setting it up this way because the car needed to be plugged. But if they're going to do that, why didn't they clean the car? Make it look nice.
It would have been funnier to see, like, McDonald's wrappers and Burger King soda cups inside the car.
So the mole rings Mikhail, and they say,
congratulations, Mikhail. Are you ready to hear my voice?
Yep.
I'm dropping the filter in 3, 2, 1. Hey, how are you? Strange to hear my voice, right? Are you surprised that I am the mole? Or were you already on the right track? You are still in the game. So maybe you have me in your sights, or maybe not, or maybe not, or maybe not. But then it's good that I called you. I find it especially enjoyable to be able to be myself for once, open and honest without that annoying filter. What's wrong? Are you disappointed? I said you would hear my voice. I never said that you would hear only my voice. But I did not lie. All the voices you've heard here were generated by AI, except mine. My voice was indeed real. Now I can imagine that you want to hear this again. You can, but you will lose the rest of the €3,000 from tonight.
the joke that we should have done there was, instead of me saying yep as Mikhail, you should have said yep as Mikhail. Because all of this scene is the mole.
Yeah. I've got a theory on this. I think, because like I couldn't work out where Mikhail's voice was in the recording, and like I know, like I would have thought they would have just had the same recording for everyone, like rather than just cut out whoever got the beard. But I think Mikhail is the 3-2-1 bit at the start, like doing the countdown with the filter sort of still on, so you can kind of hear the voice but not really, and then all the rest of the other people, and then Mikhail comes back at the end where it's, you know, like the filter starts to go back on.
I mean, it's the perfect position for the mole to be in that car and be able to control the flow of information, which is pretty much what everyone says at this point. Senna even says it's an ideal position for the mole to win, as it keeps information away from everyone else and you can tell people whatever you want to. He is quite honest with what he heard, but also not the specifics of what he heard. He says he was listening out for his two main suspects.
Would there be any situation where you bank those 400 euros into the pot?
No. I mean, despite Charlotte's meltdown, it's 400 euros in the grand scheme of things. Obviously, you listen again.
Yeah.
Because it's a personal reward for only 400 euros, which is hella cheap for this show. If she'd won with the second highest bid of 200 euros and it was 2,800, you have to have a think about whether you want to hear it again for 2,800 yeah. euros.
But, you know, if it's 400 euros, we fucking don't give a shit at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, literally, as soon as you rise above Charlotte's bid of 200 euros, I think you do it for 500, you definitely do it for 400, you definitely do it for 200.
Hmm.
I also love that we preempted the AI joke by 3 weeks.
Maybe we're finally learning how Papa Bear does this show.
We're becoming sentient.
Or alternatively, maybe they're just retroactively copying it off us again. This does happen. They've gone back in time to just do this AI joke to amuse us.
Well, they do have a DeLorean now.
I also thought it was interesting that Mikhail wasn't listening through the car, he was listening through an earpiece.
Mm.
I guess the audio in the BMW is just not good enough.
Yeah. It might have been a fairness thing, because you can hear the voices a lot clearer on headphones or earphones than you can in surround sound in a car. But
maybe there was mud in the speakers as well.
Yeah, maybe. They've just been off-roading, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So the other four return to the car, and he explains the AI joke, and Charlotte has a breakdown over him spending 400 euros to hear it again. She misjudged the game and thought everyone was going to work together to try and stop the mole. She's never seen this show before.
If we all tie on the quiz on the final quiz together, we both win.
Yeah, we all go up against the mole to win the pot. God help them when Netmole comes back, is all I have to say.
I know. I was just thinking about it today because Alex Wagner's gone viral again. And I'm like, I'm so glad Netmole has sort of gone the way of half of Warner Brothers' catalogue at the moment.
Which is what happened to Warner Brothers?
They're making stuff and they're just not airing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, there's a whole live action Wile E. Coyote movie that's just sitting somewhere getting deleted because they don't want to make any money off it.
And was it Batgirl as well? I think.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. That was a really infamous example. They said it was terrible, right? And they said, nah, we can't do this.
Mm. Yeah. Apparently, Coyote versus Acme was actually meant to be really good, though, from the people who've seen bits of it.
So why they not want it shown?
Because it'll make them more money if they just do a tax write-off on it.
Yeah.
Weird.
We've also not discussed the rather interesting post on the Mole subreddit a few days ago of a simple idea for the final quiz that would make it more dramatic.
Ugh.
The quiz would only have two questions: who is the mole and how sure are you from 0 to 100%?
I mean, if you're at the final three, wouldn't you just pick 100% no matter what?
Well, yeah, because you got a 1-in-2 shot of winning this game anyway.
Yeah.
I do like that the top comment on it just began with, why do we need this? What is wrong with the format as is?
Yeah.
Here's an idea, American fans, if you're listening. Look at this show. Look at the Dutch one. That's how you produce this fucking show.
Mm.
Not everything needs to be meddled with.
Yeah.
I mean, Vidim does occasionally. This show doesn't.
Yeah. And you can tell how pissed we are about American Mole because we're holding Vidim up as a good example.
Exactly.
That comment on Reddit is so awkward that I started singing Bad Romance. I'm sorry if that's not the right thing to say, but I just had a tough time dealing with awkward situations.
That's okay. Fuzzy's going to put Lady Papa on the bingo card, and then we'll all be annoyed.
Lady Papa.
The other bit of this was saying that if they both answer 100% and they're right, they should both get the whole prize pot. So the show has to pay double because the mole was too obvious. If they're both wrong at 100%, then no one would get any money because the mole deceived them both completely. That's not how this show works. If you go for an eye for an eye, the world will go blind.
Exactly.
Idiots. I'm not even part of the mole subreddit. I just looked at this and went, oh my god, this... Ugh.
This fucking subreddit.
Yeah, this fucking subreddit indeed. So Senna says it's difficult to work out if Mikhail actually got anything from the call. Stephanie says Charlotte is very competitive and expected everyone to bid low and expose them all a bit, whereas she was the only one who actually did. And Charlotte says she was so emotional because she was angry at the group for bidding so high, she didn't even want to know what happened with the call. Bernard says that Charlotte had a strong reaction, but she could have just been moling and knowing everyone will have bid high anyway. And as Logan alluded to, he breaks the tension by singing Bad Romance and finds it difficult to deal with awkward situations.
Yeah, Jill always does a really good job of not exposing who the mole is. He always has good pa-pa-pa poker face.
Oh my god. That one is not of the tier that we're going to actually tell Jill about. He can listen back to that one. So they wake up in Damusi on day 14 and they're leaving negativity and clothing behind to go to the spa for the morning. Stephanie doesn't like it when there are a lot of people around her in a spa. She has a sauna at home. And Bernard, for some reason, overshares and tells us that he passed a kidney stone in a spa once.
While singing Bad Romance.
I'd like to object. Mikhail and Senna are still wearing clothes.
You did get to see Senna get a faceful, though, at least.
Yeah.
And when they return upstairs, they realise something is missing from their backpacks, namely their mole books. Mikhail finds a note with coordinates on the back of the door, leading them to the assignment and location where their mole books currently are.
And that's why you don't put air tags on your own mole books.
Obviously, as soon as I saw this, I tried to work out if there was a clue in the location. The coordinates are genuinely leading them to just outside a place called Sicilian Paintball.
Huh.
I wouldn't be surprised if this does end up being a clue of some description, though, because they flash those coordinates on the screen.
It was nice when they got there for Jill to be like, now, Italy has the most famous explorer in the world. His name is Christopher Columbus, and...
And today you will be ransacking villages.
Exactly.
You have to get a local to put up smallpox onto the board.
His name is Marco Polo, and today you'll be playing with horses. Not you, Logan.
Marco Polo.
In half an hour, they will get attacked, and there is a lot at stake, both €5,000 and their mole books. And they will earn €1,000 per mole book that is still intact this evening. They'll be defending their mole books, and if they lose them, that's it. Sucks to be them.
And then Stephanie says, yeah, they won't get anything from her mole books because she used code names. So they'll have to decode nicknames such as Bleater, One Ball, and Asian. They won't be able to figure out the code names at all.
With those sort of names, it's like she's writing Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Don't forget overly emotional about €400 being taken out of the stakes as well.
Yeah. Duke Alax, bad mustache.
So their mole books are hanging in blank envelopes over a fire pit, and if they prevent the books from falling, they will earn the money. But the books are only being held up by 3 red ropes. As long as one rope is standing, so are their books.
I don't think this is what Snoop Dogg was talking about when he said rub it like it's hot.
And the ropes will be attacked by assailants who want to cut them with knives, and all they have to defend themselves with are paintballs. Each of them has a gun with 6, and they test them in advance, because that's a sensible thing when you've got limited amount of paintball, when you got a limited amount of paintballs.
And of course, Mikhail tells them they all lost a ball.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm like, yeah, thank you for sharing with the rest of the class.
And then they all just say, well, it's not like it's going to kill us.
I did think it was interesting that Stephanie was the only one who didn't do a test fire. I mean, at this point in the episode, I was pretty confident she was going to end up going anyway because she was getting one of those farewell edits. And then she just does something overly consistent here and goes, you know what? I'm not wasting my paintball. I know this show too well.
I heard one testing note that bullet reminds me of that scene in Futurama when they fight the Star Trek people and Bender finds the machine gun and he fires every bullet to the machine gun so that they're screwed.
I mean, that is basically the mole tactic here, is to waste as many paintballs as possible, I think.
Yeah.
It would have been more brilliant if the mole found a way to make them test fire a second time. It's like, are we sure that was the paintball that fired? Let's fire again and compare it to the first shot that we fired.
The big question of this challenge, I think, is do you think they were the real mole books?
I think they'd have to be reasonably similar copies because, like, Senev recognizes his.
Well, he recognizes his because of the color. When it falls into the fire, that doesn't look like a well-used book to me.
I just always assumed it was just they matched the colors on the books.
Yeah.
And also, we know from the very first challenge of this season, they have more than one of each of the mole books. Because there was the ones on the line, and then there were the ones that Gilles handed out, and I don't think those are the same ones. I wouldn't be surprised if at the reunion, Senna and Stephanie are given their actual real mole books back as a souvenir.
Yeah.
I wish the attackers had to use oyster knives to chop at the ropes.
No, a Swiss Army knife. They've got to find the right blade for it.
Hey, a saw.
But yeah, I suspect they were not their actual mole books. Because it's a step too far even for this program to burn people's mole books, I think. Knowing that they are the one major souvenir that anyone goes home with.
Aside from tattoos.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there are certain people who've come home with tattoos. Lynn went home with the doubler as well. But pretty much nobody goes home with a souvenir of this show. And after the season, they all get given their mole books. I don't think that they would be nasty enough to burn the mole books here. That's my gut feeling. I might be wrong, but I really wouldn't be surprised if at the reunion, Gilles goes, guess what, Senna and Stephanie? Here are your actual mole books. We didn't burn them, really.
Yeah.
But the punishment with the mole books isn't necessarily their memory of the season being burned, because I don't think it was. It's having to start over here.
Mm.
So I think if you as production go, well, the punishment here is going to be making them start over, you can't let them have their mole books burned, I don't think.
Mm.
The other joke I thought they might do is when Jill says, oh, we're going to give you a new mole book tomorrow, give them one of the old contestants' ones. But then they don't get their mole book back, so I don't think they'd do that either. So there are three rounds, each lasting 3 minutes, and each harder than the last. And the first begins with six assailants. Two assailants are shot with 1 minute left on the round, and Charlotte and Bernard don't defend their rope between them, which then gets cut.
Do you think Philippe and Noah were two of the assailants?
I hope so. Papa Bear's gone very quiet on whether any of the other assailants from Germany have come back. I suspect not at this point. The good news is they can earn more paintballs between rounds. The bad news is, to do so, they have to sacrifice a mole book. And they decide to sacrifice book number one, and as it burns, they realize it's Senna's one.
And then, who was it, Mikhail that was fishing for a clue?
Yeah.
Do you think that the 1998 code was an actual clue?
I think it was highlighted that there was a clue somewhere in this challenge, but I don't think it was that. I don't know what the clue is.
Well, there were three codes that we saw. One was Senna's, one was Stephanie's, and the other one never got revealed, but it was only revealed in the challenge explanation by Gilles. So my suspicion is that that code was actually on the mole's mole book.
Yeah, because I was thinking, 1998, could it be that somebody was born August 8th, 1991, September 8th, 91, September 8th, 1919?
Or alternatively, one of Mikhail's many kids, stepkids or grandkids, was born in 1998.
Mm.
So when they burn Senna's book, they get 30 paintballs for it, for another six each. And the second round has nine opponents, and this time they have a quad bike. And Charlotte has seemingly never seen a quad bike before.
Well, Stephanie hadn't seen JFK or John Lennon before either, so I guess Charlotte gets a pass here.
So Stephanie gets one as he's just about to cut a rope. But then smoke bombs appear, and they get down to just one attacker before he cuts the rope between Stephanie and Mikhail. I think on the did they burn the actual mole books thing as well, it unburdens the mole in this challenge as well. Because if those aren't the real mole books, then the mole doesn't really have to care whether the books burn or not.
Yeah.
I think the mole, even if it isn't Mikhail, which it is, would probably feel a little bit bad about taking away all four of the other mole books just to keep money out of the pot here. Because, as I said, it's everyone's major souvenir.
Yeah.
After the second round, they can find out whose book is behind which envelope. Each of them gets to go to the shooting range individually. By hitting a numerical target, they can find out which book is behind that number. And they get one shot each. Bernard finds out that Mikhail is behind number 4. Mikhail misses. Senna finds out Charlotte's behind number 5 and says she won't sacrifice hers no matter what. Charlotte misses and Stephanie finds out that her book is behind number 3, meaning that Bernard's is behind number 2. And Stephanie volunteers to sacrifice her book, assuming everyone is honest about letting her copy information, and they go for the group pot. And she says she wants to course correct after yesterday and lets them burn number 3. And we also see that she said that she didn't write much down and can use it as a fresh start to get more information.
I like how when Senna hears that the fifth mole book is Charlotte's, he's like, well, I guess we're not burning number 5.
That one's staying up.
Not because of Charlotte's reaction, but because then they'll be subjected to hearing bad romance for the rest of the season.
And also, if you think how much she had a hissy fit about €400 being kept from the pot, it's €1,000 and it directly affects her. She would have had a breakdown.
What are you talking about, Stephanie? Number 5 is your book, not number 3.
And for the final round, there are 12 opponents and a BMW 4x4 with full sound system carrying 4 of them. The other fun bit of the second round as well is Gilles jump scaring them on the tannoy. Because the first round ends and then Gilles just comes at full volume and scares the living bejesus out of them.
Actually, there should have been 5 rounds. The normal one, ATV, an RP, the BMW, and then an army tank.
I would have loved to see 4 of them come out of an RP. Within 50 seconds, they get rid of the 4 in the car, starting the second wave, and they repel the second wave to leave just 4. With 40 seconds left, they have 1 attacker left. Bernard then runs out of paintballs, as do Charlotte, Stephanie, and Mikhail, and the time runs out as Senna's paintballs do, giving them 3 mole books, €3,000 of 5,000 for the challenge, €4,200 of 14,000 for the episode, and €15,340 of 83,300 for the season so far. Gilles then returns to confirm the win and tells Senna and Stephanie that they will receive their new books in the morning, assuming they survive the execution.
I like how the most lighthearted challenge this episode involved coffins.
Yeah, the cheeriest challenge this episode involves 2 of them pretending to be dead, and the other 3 having a knife fight with an old Italian man. So it is now time for the test. 20 questions about the identity and actions of the mole. Whoever knows least goes home except for the mole who can never go home. Stephanie says that she's happy they earned money. It did a lot to boost morale. She says she wasn't focused on her book, and now she gets lots of information from everyone for free. Charlotte says that there was a lot of discussion about whether they needed to sacrifice mole books after the first round, and Bernard said no. They'd have lost if they listened to Bernard. Everyone made a lot of mistakes apart from her during the bidding. That is evidence. Wrong. She is 100% incorrect there. Everyone else did make mistakes. I mean, Senna and Mikhail didn't. She very much did. Stephanie and Bernard very much did. And she says that Senna didn't recognise the common song, which is overplayed in every club, and that we've definitely heard of. Senna says Bernard and Charlotte wasted their paintballs and couldn't defend their rope. They either shot too much, too poorly, or maybe a bit of both. Stephanie described John Lennon as Harry Potter, and it was a failure before they even started. Mikhail says that they all agreed to share information, but if he also sees something someone else didn't, he might not. Bernard couldn't find the saw in the Swiss Army knife, which was odd. And Bernard says Mikhail is easy to read but loses a lot of money. He has an explanation for everything. Gilles tells them that it's been an intense few days, with funeral processions, strange voices and ritual burnings, but also with money which must feel good. 3/4 of the journey is over, meaning the finale is on the horizon, and it will take place in the Sicilian capital, Palermo. The mole is definitely coming, but who else will join them? That's just a little bonus one. I'm not even including that in the list that's on the horizon here. Bernard and Senna then get green screens before Logan's top suspects of Stephanie gets the red.
In the words of John Lennon, Avada Kedavra.
Whoop whoop, that's the sound of Logan sucks.
In the words of one Michael Harmstone at the start of this year, she gone.
It's funny, before the execution started, I wrote, I think Charlotte has gone here. Bernard safe, Senna safe. And then as soon as Stephanie's name came up, my exact words in my notes in all capital letters were, no, 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 out. And my next line was, I was so convinced.
Yep. As soon as you sent that suspect list last night of Stephanie at number one, I screenshotted it, sent it to Biddles and went, rough, row. I cannot tell you how much joy I had when Stephanie went, because I was fairly convinced leading into the execution that she was going to go. She had a lot of very non-suspicious moments in this episode. I also felt like the production joke would very much be, we're going to put Senna and Stephanie as the first two screens. And when he did Bernard first, I thought, one of Senna and Stephanie's probably going then, because there's no tension in this whatsoever if he just types in Senna, then Stephanie, and it's a red screen. So when Senna got his green screen, I'm like, oh, someone's not going to be happy.
In the words of John Lennon, mischief managed.
It is also worth pointing out that Mikhail has still not seen a screen. We're now six executions in, and he's the only person to not see a screen.
Interesting.
This could be a MOLUS 5 situation. So yeah, in summary, whoop whoop, that's the sound of Logan sucks. I'm not going to take the piss too much, obviously, because...
there's plenty of time for that.
Yeah, the shoe could very much be on the other foot next week. I don't think it will be. I think Charlotte's going next and we're going to have an all-male final for the second time. But still, I could enter the finale with a bloody nose here, so I'm not going to be too smug about it. But it did really, really, really make me laugh that after weeks and weeks of you having one suspect go home, which was Coco from week three, you go from one suspect to six having gone home in one big move, to quote Jeff Probst.
And if Charlotte does go home next week, whoop whoop, that's the sound of Sausage Fest.
Yes, indeed. So she's genuinely upset. She's proud of her journey and will be missed. Charlotte says that Stephanie was her new best friend. From day one, she was a fantastic, smart woman who played the game well. Senna had a blast with her. She did everything her own way and made it funny and enjoyable. And it's so cool that she's going home with the permanent souvenir of the tattoo. For me, it was more relief that she was going home, not being the mole, despite having the word yes tattooed on her ankle. Bernard says that the Sisyphean torment was exhausting, but they weren't giving up. And she still had a huge smile even after that horrible torment. And Mikhail said she was crazy, and they both went all out for everything.
I did love that Charlotte had something really nice to say. Senna had something really nice to say. Bernard had something really nice to say. Michael was like, well, she was yellow, and then she went to blue.
Yeah. So next time, Mikhail gets social. They watch a puppet show of the story of the mole. There are dice and a mind game. Charlotte fails to blow a conch shell. And Pinocchio catches some liars.
I really hope Mikhail goes home next week.
Nah, he's not going home next week. He's the mole, Saunders.
I put him at the bottom of the suspect list this week, just for this week, purely out of spite.
I thought you might have done, because when you sent your suspect list over yesterday, I'm like, he really thinks Mikhail was the least suspicious person this episode? What the ever-living fuck?
I want retribution.
So I'm just imagining Logan doing the I want retribution thing in the JFK voice.
Put that into the JFK AI.
JFKI.
JFKI.
Here's what I want. I want, at the finale, me to be right and you to get the Gilles cackle this year. Because, historically, I have done terribly at finales. I have never gone to a Belgian mole finale and been correct on the mole.
I'm 2 for 2, right?
Yeah, you are 2 for 2.
That's
irritatingly.
Right. Yes. Now I remember.
So, I want you to be wrong. I want you to be so wrong, even. I want Jill to be sitting behind you and laugh his little head off as I am right and you are wrong.
I don't care who's right and who's wrong, as long as I'm right when I'm there.
Which could be next year, but we've not really discussed
could
it.
Could be.
Also on the pool, for the first time in what feels like forever, Logan loses a team member as he now has just Charlotte and Bernard. I am now also guaranteed a finalist with my team of Senna and Mikhail. And that's the other element that made me so happy about this execution, because it now guarantees that at least one of Senna and Mikhail will be speaking to us. And I can't wait for either of them, I'll be honest. It's going to be a delight. On First Suspicions, five people. Carl, Jack Pitts, meaning yet more negative points for you, Jack. Don't think I'm not going to say it. Brian, Sophie and Walter all had Stephanie at number one, while Aaron was the only one to have her at number nine, saving him from being bottom of the pack this week. With a perfect 10, even though they were a 12, the Flemish public are now winning. The nearest human is Yoreen with 13, and Carl is now last with 26. And with just 2 weeks left, Logan's team is an average of 4.96 and mine is 4.13 unadjusted, which becomes 2.66 and 2.34 respectively on the adjusted scores. Senna is leading on 2.18 out of 4, followed by Charlotte on 2.25, Mikhail on 2.5, and Bernard on 3.07. You can, as always, do the suspect list at suspectlist.rtbwarriors.com or at the link in our bio. And the bonus question this week, purely because Fuzzy said during Vidim I'm not being mean enough, is what did the mole bid to hear their own voice? Was it €200, €2,500, €2,600, or €2,800?
Yeah, so it was one of them.
2,500.
You are wrong, but we'll get there. The Flanders suspicions last week were Senna on 29%, up 8 from the previous week, Mikhail on 28, up 6, Stephanie on 21, flat from the previous week, Bernard on 11, plus 2, and Charlotte on 11, minus 2. And the final two questions for now, at least, are who do we suspect and who is going home?
So my new order is Senna, Charlotte, Bernard, and Mikhail. And I think Mikhail is going to go home. Let's do this. Mikhail, you gone.
Bear in mind, you did predict that last week. And, well, to coin a phrase, you wrong.
So from top to bottom, Mikhail, Senna, Charlotte, Bernard. I think maybe Senna.
Interesting. I mean, selfishly, at this point in the season, as I said last week, I more want people to go home who I think will be less interesting to speak to.
Yeah.
So, very much, I think out of the four people, I'd rather speak to Mikhail, Senna, and Bernard than Charlotte. Not to say that I won't want to speak to Charlotte, obviously, if she does end up listening to this. But I think, personally, I'd rather Charlotte goes home next week. Mikhail's obviously the mole. I'm not going to change that. And I seem to remember my order was Mikhail, Senna, Bernard, then Charlotte, which is also the order I think the finish is going to be. I think Mikhail, mole, Senna, winner, Bernard, loser, and Charlotte, fourth place. And I know you may be thinking, oh, you've not got to Papa Bear's nickname yet. That's the very last bit of this episode, I'm afraid, because there's only one way on this podcast that we present information in lists, and that is via the medium of Rachel Riley. So, she's been busy this week coming up with nicknames for Papa Bear, like Papillon, a Dustin Hoffman reference. The Papasta Sword, the Funeral Papart, My Papart Will Go On, Papandle in the Wind, Papilluia, Papacavel, In the Paparms of an Angel, How Great Thou Papart, Papais in Grace, Papave Maria, Papai Jesu. I can't do that one. Papai Jesu, Swing Low, Sweet Papariot, Don't Worry Be Papi, The Paprayer. Can't do that one either. Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. You'll Never Papork Alone by, obviously, Gillian the Papacemakers. He Ain't Heavy, He's My Papa. Frank Supapa. And The Greatest Show Papad.
Only the good ones were my ideas.
Yeah, we went for a funeral song theme, as you might have guessed. And now the problem is we have to pick one of those to be the official one that Fuzzy does not guess on Bingo this week.
I think Sweet Low, Sweet Papariot.
Yeah, Swing Low, Sweet Papariot is a good one. I am quite fond of My Papart Will Go On and Papandle in the Wind, I'll be honest.
Papandle in the Wind. This fucking show.
This fucking podcast, I think you'll find. So yeah, we need a final decision, and then we can end the episode.
Let's go with Papandle in the Wind.
Anything else you want to say about this episode?
Nope.
Good, right.
I'm good. The subtitles have been really good this season.
They have, yeah. I mean, I do obviously say thank you to the Legion of Subtitlers, mainly because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But yeah. Thank you to the subtitler, you know who you are. I'm being deliberately very coy about who the subtitler is, just in case.
Yeah. You know, you expect maybe there's like mistakes or whatever, but we haven't even had a kerning error this year. They've been really, really good.
No, it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
So, now that we've praised the Legion of Subtitlers, thank you for listening to our Demolbelkia Season 12 recap. We'll be back next week to continue the hunt for the new Small in Sicily. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we are RTV Warriors, or you can email us on contact@rtvwarriors.com. Logan's on the artist formerly known as Twitter @LogusPukwaki, Binners as a Groom Recapper, and I'm MJ Harmstone. You can also support us on Patreon @patreon.com/RTVWarriors. Thank you, as always, to the Legion of Subtitlers. We will see you next week.
Peace out and just chill till the next flavoring.
Shit, I was forgot. I was supposed to think of something for this one as well.
Yeah, you were. I thought you were just doing a bit then, but evidently not. Instead, you should just sing "Bad Romance" because this is getting awkward now.
Yeah. I was about to say I was gonna start singing "Bad Romance."
just say "Bye, Bindles."
Bye, Bindles.
Well, Logan was dumb.